Mrs. Laurence Olivier. Today's play is adapted from some sequences chosen from Charles Dickens' immortal Pickwick Papers. We've taken our title from perhaps the most famous trial in the history of fiction, and I myself shall be playing the role of that formidable sergeant at law, Sergeant Buzfuz. So now, back we go through many loving years to hear the case of Bardell versus Pickwick.
Freeman's Court, Cornhill, August 28, 1830. Bardell against Pickwick.
Let us take a moment to examine how such a strange circumstance could have arisen. To anyone acquainted with the admirable regulation of Mr. Pickwick's mind, his appearance and behavior that morning would have been most mysterious and unaccountable. It was evident that something of great importance was in contemplation, but what that something was, not even Mrs. Bardell herself had been enabled to discover. Mrs. Bardell was his landlady, the relict and sole executrix of a deceased custom house officer, a comely woman of bustling manners and agreeable appearance, with a natural genius for cooking. The only other inmate of the house was Mrs. Bardell's little son. It was about young Master Bardell that Mr. Pickwick now inquired.
Your little boy is a very long time gone, Mrs. Bardell.
Why, it's a good long way to the barrister.
Ah, very true, so it is. Mrs. Bardell.
Sir?
Don't you think it a much greater expense to keep two people than to keep one?
Oh, Mr. Pickwick, what a question.
Well, but do you?
That depends. That depends on the person, you know, Mr. Pickwick.
Ah, yes, that's very true. But the person I have in my eye is a careful and saving person and has a great deal of sharpness, which may be of material use to me.
Oh, Mr. Pickwick.
To tell you the truth, Mrs. Bardell, I have made up my mind.
Oh, dear me, sir.
You'll think it very strange now that I never consulted you about this matter till I sent your little boy out this morning,
Yes. Oh, I mean, no, sir.
Well, what do you think? It'll save you a good deal of trouble, won't it?
Oh, I never thought anything of the trouble. And I should take more trouble to please you then than ever. But it is so kind of you to have consideration for my loneliness.
Ah, to be sure. You will always have somebody to sit with you.
I'm sure I ought to be a very happy woman.
And your little boy will have a companion.
Oh, you dear. Oh, you kind, good, playful dear. Oh, I'm going to kiss you. Oh,
no, but bless my soul. Oh. Mrs. Bardell, my good woman, pray compose yourself.
Oh.
Mercy on me, what a situation. I hear somebody coming up the stairs. No, don't. There's a good creature. Don't.
Alas, for Mr. Pickwick, entreaty and remonstrance were alike unavailing. Mrs. Bardell had fainted in his arms. And before he could deposit her on a chair, Master Bardell entered the room, ushering in Mr. Tupman, Mr. Winkle, and Mr. Snodgrass. The Pickwickians stared at their friend in paralyzed astonishment, and Mr. Pickwick stared back. It was young Master Bardell who broke up the tableau with an unearthly screaming and howling. Mrs. Bardell, partly revived, was led away, and poor Pickwick attempted an explanation.
I cannot conceive what has been the matter with that woman. I had merely announced to her my intention of keeping a manservant when she fell into the extraordinary paroxysm in which you found her. Very extraordinary thing.
Very.
Placed me in such an extremely awkward situation.
Very. There's a man in the passage now.
Ah, that will be my new manservant, Samuel Weller. Have him come in.
Mr. Samuel Weller appeared forthwith. Despite the fact that Sam's appearance was partial proof of Mr. Pickwick's explanation, the three friends could still not soon forget the situation in which they had found Mr. Pickwick. We need not linger over the events of the ensuing months. Suffice it to say that Pickwick retained the services of a solicitor, one Mr. Perker of Gray's Inn. Mr. Perker, in turn, retained as counsel the illustrious sergeant-at-law, Sergeant Snubbin, a man at the very top of his profession, of whom it was said that he led the court by the nose. At last, the day of the trial arrived. As Pickwick entered the guild hall and took his place just beneath the desks of the King's Council, he reflected that it was irony indeed that he should be the defendant in a breach of promise of marriage action on that particular day, it being the 14th February, St. Valentine's Day.
Silence! Oh. Silence! Silence!
The loud cry of silence announced the entrance of the judge into the court. Just at this point, Mrs. Bardell was led into her place. She presented a most pathetic spectacle and pitifully asked to be informed where she was, being quite distracted. Mrs. Dodson and Fogg entreated her to try to compose herself, while the Sergeant Buzzfuzz rubbed his eyes very hard with a large white handkerchief and gave an appealing look towards the jury. The judge was obviously touched, and several of the beholders tried to cough down their emotions.
Very good notion, that indeed, Pickwick. Capital fellas, these Dodson and Fogg. Excellent ideas of effect, excellent.
Bardell and Pickwick.
Now Sergeant Buzzfuzz rose with all the majesty and dignity that the proceedings required and addressed the jury.
You have heard from my learned friend, gentlemen, that this is an action for breach of promise of marriage, in which the damages are laid at £1,500. The facts and circumstances you shall hear detailed by me and proved by the unimpeachable female whom I will place in that box before you.
Next, Sergeant Buzzfuzz described how Mrs. Bardell had placed in her front parlor window a written placard bearing the inscription, Apartments Furnished for a Single Gentleman, and how Mr. Pickwick had become her lodger. Then came his description of Pickwick himself.
A being erect upon two legs and bearing all the outward semblance of a man and not a monster. Of this man, Pickwick, I will say little. The subject presents but few attractions. And, gentlemen, I am not the man, nor are you, gentlemen, the men, to delight in the contemplation of revolting heartlessness and of systematic villainy. I shall show you that for 2 years, Pickwick continued to reside at Mrs. Bardell's house. Mrs. Bardell, during the whole of that time, waited on him, attended to his comforts, cooked his meals, and in short, enjoyed his fullest trust and confidence. I shall prove to you that he distinctly offered her marriage, previously taking care that there should be no witness, and I will prove on the testimony of 3 of his best own friends, gentlemen, most unwilling witnesses, that on that morning he was discovered holding the plaintiff in his arms. Oh, dear, oh, dear. I have here 2 letters sent to the plaintiff, admitted to be in the handwriting of the defendant. The first, Garraway's, 12 o'clock. Dear Mrs. B, chops and tomato sauce, yours, Pickwick. The second letter, Dear Mrs. B, I shall not be at home till tomorrow, slow coach. Chops and tomato sauce? Slow coach? What does this mean? Gentlemen, I suggest the words of these letters are mere substitutes for some endearing terms, artfully contrived by Pickwick to delude any third parties into whose hand the correspondence might fall. And what is this allusion to slow coach? For aught I know, it may be a reference to Pickwick himself, who has most unquestionably been a criminally slow coach during the whole of this transaction. Oh,
yes. Sergeant Buzzfuzz hereupon paused to see whether the jury smiled at his joke. Not getting much response, he deemed it advisable to return to the dismals for his conclusion.
Gentlemen, my client's prospects and hopes are ruined. But Pickwick, the ruthless destroyer, Pickwick, who comes before you today with his heartless tomato sauce and slow coaches, Pickwick rears his head with unblushing effrontery and gazes without a sigh on the ruin he has made. Heavy damages, gentlemen, is the only punishment with which you can visit him. For these damages, my client now appeals to an enlightened, a high-minded, a right-feeling, a conscientious, a dispassionate, a sympathizing jury of her civilized countrymen.
This was the finish and climax of Sergeant Buzzfuzz's address. Mr. Winkle was then called to the witness box.
Now, sir, have the goodness to let his lordship and the jury know what your name is, will you?
Winkle, sir.
What's your Christian name, sir?
Nathaniel, sir.
Daniel. Any other name?
Nathaniel, sir. My lord, I mean.
Nathaniel Daniel or Daniel Nathaniel?
No, my lord. Only Nathaniel, not Daniel at all.
What did you tell me it was Daniel for then, sir?
I didn't, my lord.
You did, sir. How could I have got Daniel on my notes unless you told me so, sir?
This argument was, of course, unanswerable. Poor Mr. Winkle bowed and endeavored to feign an easiness of manner, which in his then state of confusion gave him rather the air of a disconcerted pickpocket. The question continued.
I believe you are a particular friend of the defendant, are you not?
I've known Mr. Pickwick now, as well as I recollect at the moment, nearly...
No, pray, Mr. Winkle, do not evade the question. Are you or are you not a particular friend of the defendant's?
I was just
about... Will you or will you not answer my question, sir?
If you don't answer the question, you'll be committed, sir.
Yes, I...
Yes, you are. And why couldn't you say that at once, sir? Perhaps you know the plaintiff too, eh, Mr. Winkle?
I don't know her, but I have seen her when I went to call on Mr. Pickwick at Goswell Street.
Ah... And do you remember calling on the defendant on one particular morning in the month of July last?
Yes, I do.
Were you accompanied on that occasion by a friend of the name of Tupman and another of the name of Snodgrass?
Yes, I was.
Are they here?
No. Yes, they are over there.
Then pay attend to me, Mr. Winkle, and never mind your friends. Now, sir, tell the gentlemen of the jury what you saw on entering the defendant's room on this particular morning. Come, out with it.
Mr. Pickwick was holding the plaintiff in his arms, with his hands grasping her waist, but only because... I mean, you see, the plaintiff appeared to have fainted away.
Indeed. And did you hear the defendant say anything?
I heard him call her a good creature and ask her to compose herself. For what a situation it was if anybody should come, or words to that effect.
Now, Mr. Winkle, I have only one more question to ask you. Will you undertake to swear that Pickwick, the defendant, did not say on the occasion in question, "My dear Mrs. Bartell, you are a good creature. Compose yourself to this situation, for to this situation you must come," or words to that effect?
No, I didn't understand him so...
Do I understand that you will not swear that Pickwick did not make use of the expression I have quoted?
Yes. I mean...
You may leave the box, sir.
Sergeant Buzfuss sat down with a triumphant expression, and poor Mr. Winkle left the box, feeling he might perhaps not have helped his friend's cause. It must be admitted that Mr. Pickwick's case had not gone off in too particularly happy a manner up to this point. Tracy Tupman and Augustus Snodgrass were severally called into the box. Both corroborated the testimony of their unhappy friend. And each was driven to the verge of desperation by excessive badgering.
Call Samuel Weller!
It was quite unnecessary to call Samuel Weller, for he stepped briskly into the box the instant his name was pronounced.
What's your name, sir?
Sam Weller, my lad.
Do you spell it with a V or a W?
That depends on the taste and fancy of the speller, me lad. I never had occasion to spell it more than once or twice in me life, but I spells it with a wee.
Now, Mr. Weller.
Now, sir.
I believe you are in the service of Mr. Pickwick, sir. Speak up, if you please, Mr. Weller.
I mean to speak up, sir. I am in the service of that there gentleman, and a very good service it is, sir.
Little to do and plenty to get, I suppose.
Oh, quite enough to get, sir, as the soldier said when they ordered him 350 lashes.
You must not tell us what the soldier or any other man said, sir.
Very good, my lord.
Do you recollect anything particular happening on the morning when you were first engaged by the defendant, eh, Mr. Weller?
Yes, I do, sir.
Have the goodness to tell the jury what it was.
I had a regular new fit out of clothes that morning, gentlemen of the jury. Oh, and that was a very particular and uncommon circumstances with me in those days.
You had better be careful, sir.
So Mr. Pickwick said at the time, my lord. And I was very careful of that there suit of clothes. Very careful indeed.
Do you mean to tell me, Mr. Dweller, that you saw nothing of this fainting of the plaintiff in the arms of the defendant?
Certainly not. I was in the passage till they called me up, and the old lady wasn't there.
Where did the passage? Have you a pair of eyes, Mr. Weller?
Yes, I've a pair of eyes. If they was a pair of patent double magnifying gas microscopes of extra power, perhaps I might be able to see through a flight of stairs and a deal door. But being only eyes, you see, me vision's limited.
Mr. Weller, now, I'll ask you a question on another point, if you please.
If you please, sir.
Do you remember going to Mrs. Bardell's house ostensibly to collect Mr. Pickwick's possessions in November last?
Oh, yes, very well.
I thought we should get at something at last.
I rather thought that too, sir.
Now, what passed about the trial, will you tell us, please?
With all the pleasure in life, sir. After a few unimportant observations from the two virtuous females having a cup of tea there, the ladies gets into a very great state of admiration at the honourable conduct of Mr. Dodson and Fogg. Them two gentlemen is sitting near you now.
Yes, the attorneys for the plaintiff. Yes, pray continue.
I will. They said what a very generous thing it was of them to have taken up the case on spec and to charge nothing at all for costs unless they got them out of Mr. Pickwick.
Perfectly useless to attempt to get any evidence through the impenetrable stupidity of this witness, my lad. Stand down, sir!
Would any other gentleman like to ask me anything?
You may go down, sir.
Sam went down accordingly, after doing Mrs. Dodson and Fogg's case as much harm as he conveniently could. It was now Sergeant Snubbin's turn to address the jury. He delivered a very long and very emphatic address in which he bestowed the highest possible praise on the conduct and character of Mr. Pickwick. Mr. Justice Stareleigh summed up in the old-fashioned form, if Mrs. Bardell was right, it was perfectly clear that Mr. Pickwick was wrong, and so forth and so on. The jury then retired to their private room to talk the matter over. An anxious quarter of an hour elapsed, and the jury came back.
Gentlemen of the jury, are you agreed upon your verdict?
We are.
Do you find for the plaintiff, gentlemen, or for the defendant?
For the plaintiff.
Ah. With what damages, gentlemen?
£750.
Oh. Oh. You may try and try and try again, Mr. Dodson Fogg, but not one spark of your costal damages you ever get for me. No, not if I spend the rest of my existence in a debtor's prison.
So the case of Bardell versus Pickwick came to an end. Happily, Pickwick did not have to spend the rest of his existence in a debtor's prison, although he was forced to spend some considerable space of time there. At the end of it all, Mr. Pickwick was inclined to think it had all been for the best. As for Mrs. Bardell, she let lodgings to many conversable single gentlemen with great profit, but never brought any more actions for breach of promise of marriage.